You're listening to The Cube Show on demand. Get loud.
I really don't understand your question. I don't know if I can't hear or you guys can't talk in the mic or whatever.
Get crazy.
You go find them, you throw your arms around them, you give them a big kiss on the mouth if you're a girl.
Get nuts.
Get up, baby. Get up. Oh, yeah, it's gone.
It's The Cube Show.
This is All Born Radio. Yeah.
I'm a good person.
You know, y'all take it easy down there on the off, baby.
God want us to win the world championship.
You're doing it wrong. You're doing the wrong things.
Is anybody else tired or is it just me?
Hey, legitimate question, though.
Okay.
I'm drunk right now.
Wow.
Another one!
I?
And now, Cole Kublick.
He is bad Auburn man.
Cube Show, Sports Radio 730 and 103.9 The Yump. Let's go to the phones. Welcome in our NBA consultant, Joel Cordes. Joel, good morning. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate you joining us. The San Antonio Spurs wrap up the Grizzlies last night. Should we be concerned, or should there be concerning takeaways about a legitimate NBA Finals push for the Spurs based on how the Grizzlies were able to find some success against this team in round one?
No, I think you tip your hat to the Grizzlies in that they were down 0-2. They had lost 10 straight playoff games to the Spurs, and they had just finally had enough of it. They rallied around their coach. They played tough and tied that series up. I think the bigger takeaway here then is that the Spurs were able to match that toughness. There have been Spurs teams in the past that when they run up against a very athletic opponent or a very physical opponent or some kind of combination of that, they get punched in the mouth and they come back thinking that their answer has to be to execute better. That's not always the answer for everything. San Antonio got tough in that game last night. Memphis led for most of it. And what really stood out to me, you look at the rebounding margin. The Spurs, 46 boards, Memphis, 28. So San Antonio, and just in watching that game, they were hitting the offensive glass incredibly hard. They matched Memphis's toughness. They just stayed in it. This is not an invincible Spurs team. I don't think this is one of the better defensive Spurs clubs we've seen in the last few years, but I do think they have a sort of toughness that hasn't always been there in the last couple of seasons. You credit that front line for really stepping up and being interchangeable between LaMarcus Aldridge, between a guy like David Lee, who played 26 big minutes last night. His career looked dead in the water before he joined the Spurs this season. Dwayne Dedmon hasn't played much in the series. Pau Gasol didn't do much last night besides be a big body, but he helped control the paint for them.
Joel, I want to ask you a couple of questions. That's what the show's about in a second. But first, wanted to say condolences to you on your Bucks losing last night. Last week we had talked about how you were exactly right that the Bucks were good, and the Bucks are still good. It's just that they lost the last two games to Toronto, and Toronto sort of got some help, and Kyle Lowry started playing better, and they proved to be the better team like they were. So the
it doesn't surprise me that Milwaukee lost. Milwaukee has been good but inconsistent most of the season. And even after they had that big win at home in game three and up, we're up 2-1, there was never going to be a sense of confidence about Milwaukee. In fact, I remember us talking about it, you know, kind of pointing to the fact that Milwaukee has not always taken advantage of advantages like that. And sure enough, they didn't execute all that well. They had a very difficult time getting out and running. And it's not surprising. Toronto is the much more veteran club. They've been trying to get over the hump for years now. They did get out of the first round last year barely against Indiana, and they really stepped up when the chips were down 2-1. They just kind of circled those wagons. They started getting into the paint a lot more on drives, which is very difficult to do against Milwaukee, by the way, because they are so long and because they have some good on-ball defenders like Dellavedova and Chris Middleton and obviously Giannis Antetokounmpo. Toronto just continued to get inside. They kept the game very slow. The last two games, they held Milwaukee to like under 70 shots attempted for the game, which is pretty unheard of in the NBA, but they were daring the Bucks to beat them in the half court, knowing that Milwaukee is not disciplined enough and not experienced enough to actually play that way, and it proved to be true.
Go ahead, Arky.
Oh, I just wanted to ask you another question. Tonight there's a triple header in, I don't know why the NBA doesn't like the Washington-Atlanta series at all. That's going to be on ESPNU at 6:30 tonight, whatever. They kind of do that to the Toronto-Milwaukee series too. But there's a triple header tonight. All the series can end tonight. So all three, how many do you think end tonight? Washington, Atlanta, Boston over Chicago, and the Clippers and Utah. And Utah looking to close that one out.
I think Washington and Boston both have to win tonight. I very much believe that they could win a game seven, but they need to win tonight because these turned out to be tougher series for both of them than they thought they were going to be. And both of these clubs aspire to be on that same footing as Cleveland. Knowing that Cleveland has had a couple days off already, knowing that Toronto took care of business, you don't want to be the Wizards or the Celtics and to sit there and have to mess around in a game seven with the Bulls and the Hawks respectively and where anything could happen. You really have to prove, I think, to yourself that you can close out this type of series. You talk about the third game on the night, and that's Utah and the Clippers. I've kind of believed this was going to be a seven-game series no matter what happened. The Jazz didn't have Rudy Gobert early in the series, although now he's back, and I think he's been a big reason they've won the last couple games. Clippers are down Blake Griffin, which is obviously huge for them, and I think that's why they would lose in a seven-game series. But they're still good enough, and they've played often enough without Blake that they kind of know how to do that. They also have a lot more playoff experience up and down that roster than Utah does, even though a guy like ISO Joe Johnson has been so great for the Jazz. So I think, you know, to answer your question, I think Washington and Boston finish up tonight. Utah and the Clippers go to Game 7, but Utah definitely has the advantage the longer the series goes.
Joel Cordes, our NBA consultant, joining us, talking about NBA playoffs. Joel, I would like to get your thoughts just on what you think the Eastern Conference is in the playoffs right now, minus the Cleveland Cavaliers who took care of business and moved on with a sweep. Did we just overreact on the Chicago Bulls after the first two games? With Toronto wrapping up their series, can they be a very scary team down the road, similar to what they were a season ago? When you look at the rest of the East, how much has your opinion changed? What do you think of the rest of that conference in this postseason?
Starting with the Bulls, I don't want to say got lucky, but there was a confluence of events that helped them. Number one, it was a good matchup in that the Bulls, for all of the bad things they've done all year, are a great rebounding team, partially because they missed so many shots. But they do hit the boards hard. Boston has been one of the worst rebounding teams in the league. Rajon Rondo was hot against his old team, getting into the paint whenever he wanted, creating shots for other people. Boston had no answer to that. The Celtics were dealing with Isaiah Thomas's tragedy and the death of his sister. All of those things were coming together, and yet then you remove Rajon Rondo from the equation, and Boston has some time to not only grieve but kind of circle around each other, and the Celtics have ripped off three straight games. They haven't really been all that close. So I think the Celtics dodged a bullet here in a lot of ways, but have also proven some things. The Bulls, again, I'm not impressed by the Bulls. I did think that Rondo gave them a huge lift in that it's a team that can't shoot, but he was able to collapse defenses and still open things up. The rest of the Eastern Conference, though, you're looking at Washington, Boston, and Toronto as teams that do, at least on paper, have a legitimate puncher's chance in a series with the Cavaliers if the Cavs remain flawed. Yes, Cleveland swept Indiana, but it was a pretty ugly sweep, an uninspiring sweep, except for little five-minute stretches here or there. Cleveland has the depth to beat anyone. They have the top-line star power to beat everyone. But can they get it to come together at the same time? Toronto is just as deep as Cleveland, by the way, looking ahead to that series. Obviously, they don't have a LeBron James on that roster in Toronto, but they've got enough guys who need to win their individual matchups. Kyle Lowry needs to play Kyrie Irving to a draw. Serge Ibaka needs to play Kevin Love to a draw. Everybody else has to win their matchup, and they've got to hope that Damari Carroll and P.J. Tucker, they know LeBron's going to average close to a triple-double, but they got to make sure that he gets his points inefficiently and has to work too hard to do it.
Joel, last question. I'm interested in your thoughts in the playoffs in general, especially the first round. It seems to be there's a lot of, I don't want to be mean, but a lot of boring basketball and a lot of not great basketball gets played in the first round. Are you of the mindset that you're okay with the first round being seven games or best of seven, or would you like to see it go back to best of five?
I liked it when it was best of five in that not only did you wrap it up quickly, but there was more on the line. The first round really ensures that upsets are pretty difficult to pull off, just because you have to get that extra win. And I don't know if the NBA liked that, and I think that's why they went to the seven games. And obviously you squeeze out more playoff dollars and gate sales that way too. But that being said, I love the first round either way, five games or seven games. And I know sometimes you have lopsided matchups, but to me, it's just fun to see that many teams in that tournament, much like the opening day in the NCAAs is. It's just fun to see everybody there, and you it takes about a week to get your calibration on how a series is going to go. And every time you think that somebody's going to run away with something, like when the Spurs were up 2-0, like when Chicago was up 2-0, 2-0 doesn't mean a whole lot, and it can change on a dime. So as an NBA diehard, for me, give me five games, give me seven games. I love it.
Okay. So that's fair.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just give me basketball.
Always good stuff. Appreciate it. Look forward to next week. We'll know a lot more. Thank you.
All right. Looking forward to it.
Have a good weekend. Joel Cordes there, our NBA consultant at B-Ball Joel. You can follow him on Twitter. You mentioned Darkie Shea.
Triple header tonight. Not exciting slate.
Some people thought you were kidding, but 6:30, Wizards Hawks, ESPN U?
Yeah.
And NBA TV. 7 p.m.
They really tanked those two Eastern Conference series. Just really tried to hide them.
ESPN, 7 p.m., Celtics Bulls. That's a big one with Boston leading 3-2. They can close this out in Chicago. And then 9:30 tonight on ESPN, Clippers at Jazz, Utah at home. A chance to close out the Clippers. Without Blake Griffin, you feel like Gordon Hayward and company have a really good chance of doing that.
Could be three games on Sunday to sort of end the first round mercifully if it ends up going that far. But Monday, though, they immediately start round two. Monday is Toronto at Cleveland and Houston at San Antonio. Those have been set.
Good. Let's get to 10 After Tweets. Brought to you by First Family Mortgage. Go to 1FMC.com.
Bring me the tweets!
All right, Chris Crow, going back to the game that we played. Do we have a name for that game?
Know Thy Neighbor.
Chris Crow tweets, contestant one uses UNC locker room math.
Oh, that's good math. Did I ever play that for you? We may need to play that again.
I played it
with Diet Cream.
Yes, we did that.
Did we?
The Roy Williams?
Yeah.
Yeah, we played it. Oh. B-Ran tweets, what kind of business does she own? Well, she said something about doing hardwood floors.
Her and her husband, something business. It was very quiet. I'll tell you what it's not. It's not a hockey business. They don't supply pucks.
At CLC Crow 1876 tweets, at Cube Show contestant one, inebriated. Ray Sively tweets, if at TB Buccaneers can end up with both Josh Jones and then Antonio Garcia, that would be a solid draft so far at Cube Show.
And one of those projecting
Josh
out.
Josh Jones, good football player.
Projecting out mini runs that I can't do and picks I can't do, especially when I did not see 80% of what happened last night, did not see it coming.
This is going back a little ways, but Inglorious Barner tweets, of course, at Arky Shea hates the baby being there. Yeah, Arky, why are you mean?
It's kind of dumb, that's all.
Bueller
the
tweets.
The baby doesn't remember. He's doing it to be selfish and
staying with that.
It's for him. He just wants a photo op. That's what that is.
Staying with that, Bueller tweets, took our 2-year-old to Disney World and got more joy watching her than she did because she won't remember. It's worth it. We talked about that on the show last week that when we were at Third Friday down Decatur, she saw a couple girls dressed up as Frozen characters and couldn't move. So yeah, we have talked about it, and I would love to take my daughter to Disney World just because to watch her reaction would be incredible.
This comes from someone who is not making SEC Network money. This is what I'm about to say. It seems like a lot of money just to see your 2-year-old very, very happy.
Well, she's also would be very, very happy. So
But she was really, really happy with the frozen people at Third Friday in Decatur. I'm just saying, as a practical standpoint, if my wife were coming to me with this, I'd say...
No, it's me. It's not my wife.
No, I'm saying if my wife were coming to me with the same thing, I would say, budget? Do we need to go to Florida to see our baby happy? Couldn't we just put on Moana again for the 39th, 100th time?
Yeah. Adam Schefter tweets 10 hours ago, Friday is Seahawks GM John Schneider's day. 6 scheduled picks, 2 in the second, 4 in the third.
Yeah.
It's a lot. I'm expecting to move, maybe.
Okay, let's say you have 100% of your viewing time coming up tonight. What percentage is draft versus NBA versus something else?
It'll be all draft on the main screen and NBA on the side TV. All volume on the draft.
All volume. 100% volume on draft.
Yep.
I didn't know how to break it down that.
And it'll be on ESPN. I love Mike Mayock, but the rest of the ESPN crew outweighs what you get from NFL Network.
Fair enough.
I don't need people making friends. I need legit coverage.
George Schroeder tweets, quote from Bill Hancock yesterday, said the college football playoff is changing its championship dates from, it's maybe a little far out. In 2026, they're moving them from January 13th to January 6th.
How about I just hope I'm around for these? I just hope I'm here to see these. I don't care what day they're on.
They originally scheduled these to be 2 weeks after the semifinal game. That's a long time in between.
Way too much.
This tweet comes from Chuck Carlton, DMN. That's the Dallas Morning News. Tweets, college football playoff extends the $2,500 stipend it pays to family members of players in the semis and championship games through this season.
That's good news.
Everybody wants a stipend. Me. Family wants money to travel to watch my children.
Duke Mannyweather at Big Duke 50. Offensive line scout, we've had him on the show, tweets 11 hours ago, we are not only seeing an all-time low in OL play, it has come full circle. We've hit an all-time low in OL evaluation, hashtag NFL draft. Just quickly want to give you some numbers.
Sure.
Offensive linemen taken in the first round. I'm just going to give you the number of offensive linemen taken starting in 2004.
Okay.
3, 4, 3, 4, 8, 6, 6, 8, 4, 9, 5, 7, 7, 2.
And one was a 25-year-old...
with a baby that we know you hate.
Junior. He wasn't even a senior at Utah. He was 25 years old. Apparently a great story.
What do you mean, apparently a great story? It's a good story. The guy's living in a foster home.
Kicked out of 5 schools.
Okay, and he had his issues.
Yeah.
Thought Susie Colbert said it best.
49 years old.
Drugs, run-ins, kicked out of schools. How are you here? I mean, it's pretty simple.
You know what he said?
Here's my baby.
I was about to say, look at a baby.
Cam Walker.
Distracted
Cam Walker
from the baby.
Tweets, can we just save everyone some time and petition Twitter to include a freaking butt Bama button along with reply, like, and retweet?
It would save a lot of time. By the way, you know how many times I would click that button? It better have an emoticon, too.
Oh, I've got one for you. Kathy Woody last night tweets, at Cole Kublik, why show one bad instead of the 5 good plays of O.J. Howard? To which I responded, because that's the tweet I had, and I'm not going to go back and break that game down again tonight. She said, thanks for taking time to respond. I responded, it wasn't a completely negative tweet, and I followed it up with another positive video in a tweet on OJ. Kathy Woody, at CatWoody99, responds, your film breakdown is fantastic. I'm just feeling protective of my Bama boys. Work so hard, then not get drafted where they should.
You know, it's unfortunate that there is only one number one spot to be given away. Because if I had a chance to draft one, and then one A, and then one B, and one C, you understand where I'm going? Jonathan Allen, Marlon Humphrey, Reuben Foster, O.J. Howard. They'd all have been drafted number one. How about this? If Cleveland could have drafted number one, but they would have gotten like 6 picks for that number one, like... At number one spot means you get 6 players at number one. I'm just taking the Bama roster. Maybe even brought up Cam Robinson. Why not, bros? Why not? I'm a little protective of my Bama boys. Aren't you protective of your Auburn boys, Cole? I'm protective of my Bama boys.
We all are.
Cole, they work so hard. You understand how hard these guys work? Hard. So hard. They need to be drafted where they should. And it's really 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. How many of our Bama players there should be that are eligible? Draft them down.
Is there a player that should go anywhere? When technically, considering the different amounts of opinions involved and different amounts of people who have the option to pay them involved?
Two words. Bud Bama.
That's where we needed the button right there.
Number
you know
one?
That easy button that Staple has? If we had a Bud Bama button, that thing would be a legit.
I understand Marlon Humphrey may go down as far as number three overall. But you just go in order of Alabama players. And, you know, to make it fair, make it alphabetical.
Different position every year.
Yeah.
This year, it's the receiver.
Yeah.
Chris Crow tweets at Cube Show. Damn, I love this show. At Cole Kubik just broke down my thoughts of the NFL draft coverage. Hashtag no friends, just hashtag coverage. I read minds here on the show.
You read yours.
Tell me what other sports show reads the minds of their listeners and then breaks down your thoughts. That's not happening.
Can't drive around that coverage. Hey, do you guys know that our tower was great yesterday?
It was working, operational.
All of our programming got on the air. Now, some of you didn't like the Braves coverage.
College Football 24/7 tweets via at Rap Sheet. Team gave Garen Conley polygraph test and he passed. Team was not the Raiders.
It's like what happened with Chicago.
Could you guys fax us the results of that? Yeah, you know, we don't want to administer our own.
I wonder if there's like, sure, he passed. Anywho, go ahead.
Good. We'll take him.
Be like, he didn't really pass. Ooh, he failed like a mother. It's kind of like what happened with Chicago when they traded up to get Mitch Trubisky. They did not call him when they said they were going to draft him. They did not work him out. They basically just said, when they announced the pick at the podium is when he found out he was being drafted. Which I kind of like. Cole, let me ask you this. I'm not saying this ruins the draft for me. But do you not like the aspect, like, do you not sort of dislike or find it, unnecessary, the shot of, like, any of these draft picks being on the phone with the GM? Like, what about just watching the reaction of being drafted and not, like, having Jerry Jones on the phone and being called, his name called the first time? Does that make sense? Like, them just sitting in the green room and they just hear their name and they're like, oh, I'm drafted, as opposed to Jerry Jones is talking to them saying, we're about to pick you, man.
Yeah, it's almost like we get mad at people on Twitter ruining it. We should get mad at the front office and head coaches and owners of these teams for ruining it by calling them right before they get drafted. Like, do you think that they want to – is there finality there to make sure they're cool with it? Like, is Dan Snyder calling or is Gruden calling Jonathan Allen like, I just got to make sure one last time this guy's cool with this. Hey, man, we're thinking about taking you at 17.
You cool?
How do you feel? And if Jonathan Allen were to drop a GFY, maybe they say, oh, take the Y kid, change the direction. Maybe that's what happened with Tennessee at 5, because that kid didn't even have his coat on.
I like
those
situations.
He wasn't even ready to go up there.
I love those situations.
He was kind of like, what?
You said Corey Davis? That's my name.
Let's do it.
By the way, one of my favorite parts about announcing the draft picks is when it goes, with the 17th overall pick, the blah, 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 the Washington selects, and he does a little pause. Jonathan Allen, defensive lineman, Alabama. I love that little pause. Like, we're like, Dallas, who is it? Jonathan.
All right, so when we come back, this is what we'll do. We'll knock out TV listings and another one, because Clint Sterner's going to hop on kind of a late edition at 9:40. He's had a production meeting about this game. I'm just dying to know like what they're even thinking about trying to do for this Arkansas spring game, which, if you haven't heard, is going to be inside with no fans.
Not like circulating fans. No people. No people who root for the team.
They'll be trainers and managers and coaches. All right, back with more Cube Show next. Welcome back in, Cube Show, Sports Radio 730 and 103.9 The Up. You can be a part of the show, 866-485-9867, 866-485-WUMP. We want to hear your thoughts on the draft, NBA playoffs, this Arkansas spring game, which is going to be held indoors. We've added Clint Sterner in 8 minutes to – he'll be on the call with Chris Cotter and Chris Budden to just give us an idea how this he thinks this thing's going to work. Had a production meeting this morning, so he'll kind of help us understand what they're going to do.
I wonder if the production meeting started with scrap everything.
You don't need a suit. You won't be on camera. So yeah, that'd be interesting to sort of hear that. We have not had much success in improving our interns' abilities to answer and utilize the telephone system.
No, it's
so
early.
Apparently, we do have a caller. I have no idea if this will come through on the air. And allegedly, his name is Groppy. Good morning, Groppy.
Grumpy.
Yeah. Okay, Grumpy. I was given Groppy as your name, so I apologize for that. But I just got to go by what I'm given.
What's up, sorry. Grumpy?
That must have been the name that Stephanie gave you that answered the phone.
Yes, it was. What's on your mind?
Hey, listen. I'm going to make a second point real quick about a little bit more relevant. Arky had us a commercial that says, you know, don't turn the stadium into amphitheater. And, you know, the reason that some of us don't like minor league baseball, and it's almost a sin to speak out against it, is that with two sports radio stations in Huntsville, and this one being the best.
Thank you.
They are, you know, the Stars eat up so much airtime that it takes away from local stuff. I get inundated with national stuff. I want local personalities talking about local stuff with a local flavor. And I know that the Stars don't come on this early in the morning, but it does interfere with the ability to cover some things that might come up that are more local. And because the Stars are always on the radio, and it just gets old. If I want to see them, I'll go to the stadium. If they would just do the away games on the radio, that'd be great. But a little bit more. Go ahead.
No, you're good. Go ahead.
Oh, there's a feedback. That must have been me.
Yep.
I've never interrupted myself before. That's new. The second thing. The guy in Utah, the lineman, to agree with Cole, if you're not doing something on campus or while you're enrolled in school in your college years that will get you in trouble with the university, you're a very boring person. There are so many things you have to follow. We used to go dove hunting, and we'd keep our 12-gauge shotguns in our dorm room. Could you imagine now if they came in and found 12-gauge shotguns and 50 – in four boxes of ammo to go dove hunting?
No, we actually, Terry Bowden
encouraged it.
No, he did not. We had an issue with a firearm, and I remember him saying, that's it. No guns in your trucks, in your dorms, in your cars, nowhere. No hunting rifles, no shotguns, nothing. He's like, you got to get them out. And there were a couple of dudes that were regular hunters on the team that were really upset about it. Like, we had guys that rode around in their trucks, legit.
Yeah. Yeah. And not to make this a gun thing, but I'm just saying that there's so many rules that you have to follow that in the PC universities now, it's crazy. If you don't get in trouble a little bit in college, I probably wouldn't get along with you.
Yeah,
and you probably are a very boring person, or you're real good at getting away with stuff. Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Grumpy. Appreciate the call.
I had a real quick before we get to Clint. I was an RA.
You never got in trouble in college.
Resident. Well, it depends on what you call trouble.
You didn't rewind a video one time. That was it.
Twice. Oh, that's $6 I can't get back. I was an RA in college, a resident assistant, so I was over one floor of Napier Hall, which is the hall we were in. And we had to do routine inspections. And one time I went into someone's room and found they didn't have a firearm, but they had what's that thing that I don't say welders use, but like you can get flame out of it, like it's
an arc welder.
it's like an arc. It's like an arc welder. Is that, that can't be an arc welder.
I don't know. I'm not familiar.
But it's
with
like
this.
A cylinder tube that, like, if you just sort of spark the top of it.
Oh yeah, and it's got the flame that comes out at the end.
Yeah, he had one of those, and we're like, you can't have that here. What we can't have a George Foreman grill. You think you can have one of these?
What about a Molotov cocktail? Could you have that there?
Well, it's very temporary.
Okay,
except for the damage it'll do.
Yeah. All right, we're going to get to a break. When we come back, we got to ask Clint Sterner what this Arkansas spring game that's being held at the indoor facility with no fans is going to be like. Back with more Cube Show next. All right, welcome back in Cube Show Sports Radio 730 and 103.9. The sort of a late edition here. We don't usually do a 940 guest, but was able to grab Clint Sterner, who'll be on the call for the Arkansas spring games tomorrow. A little bit odd, however, is that this game's going to be moved indoors. Still will be televised. No fans. Clint Sterner's going to be doing color for this game. Clint, good morning, man. How you doing?
I'm good, man. How about you? Another crazy weekend. I called Tennessee last weekend. Got canceled at halftime because of weather. And then here comes 15 inches of rain in Arkansas.
I'm going to get back to that Tennessee game just for a moment because I do want your take on what you saw. But, all right, just take my listeners through how you think you're even going to operate this. I was trying to explain. I've been to the Arkansas indoor facility. I know the weight room sort of overlooks that indoor facility, so there could be an area up there where you guys could sort of perch yourselves and look out, and obviously there's places for cameras because every practice indoors is filmed. That won't be a problem, but how do you guys think you're going to attempt to handle this game?
Well, one thing is coaches already, you know, the public, you know, obviously not coming, but there are fans and, I mean, there are friends and family that are in town. So they're going to accommodate those guys, you know, some way, shape, or form. I believe they're going to use one of the end zones, maybe move some bleachers indoors. And from a camera standpoint, there's some scaffolding on one side. As you mentioned, there's a weight room on the other. So there will be some view angles from various spots in the indoor. I think it's going to be cool, man. I think we'll do some stuff on the field, get down there with the coaches and maybe even some of the players. Probably have a lot more access, Cole, than what we typically have. So, you know, I think it could be cool. I mean, it's going to be a heck of a deal technically to pull off for the producers. But, you know, for us former players to get down there with the coaches and get in the middle of the action is pretty cool.
Now, I'm just thinking, and Clint Sterner's joining us. He'll be on the call for the Arkansas spring game tomorrow on the SEC Network. It'll be held indoors, no fans. That access that you mentioned, I would have to think, just based on proximity for you guys, will be a lot more than normal. And then also not having to worry about fans, different things of that nature, could ramp that up a little bit more as well. Right, have they told you guys you can just go ahead and go polos? Are you going to be on camera at all for this deal?
Yeah, there will be plenty of camera. We'll be on camera some, but they haven't discussed the dress code yet, man. I think we're still guys are still flying in and landed and getting to the hotel and trying to figure out exactly what we're going to do with TV trucks and cameras. So. I don't think our wardrobe's been discussed, but you know me, man. I'm all about the polo, man. If we can go polo, I'm in.
Yeah, I saw Luke and Bill pulled it off in the LSU game going polo down on the sideline. I was like, wait a minute. How did that happen? Because no one told me that was even open for discussion. I went shirt and tie. So, yeah, I didn't know that was available.
Right, yeah. I'm going to put on – I don't have the color-coordinated chucks like you got, but I'd like to wear my Jordan 1s and my black SEC Network polo as well. That'd be a nice day's work.
Clint Sterner with us of the SEC Network on the call for Arkansas spring game tomorrow. What are you looking for in this Arkansas football team tomorrow? What position group could be most intriguing for you that you want to see something out of tomorrow?
Well, I think offensively Arkansas lost, you lost four of your top five pass catchers from a year ago, that being Jeremy Sprinkle, the tight end, and then three of your top four receivers. So Jared Cornelius is the only name that people recognize coming back. The receiving core, obviously, you've got some young guys that have been in the program for a year, year and a half, even 2 years. Deion Stewart's one that's getting a lot of touches at practice. He's a guy that I expect to be an impact player this year. But the big name that everybody's going to be looking for is number five, Brandon Martin. I mean, he's a number one JUCO receiver in the country. The task for him is learning the offense, knowing where to line up, what are your splits, what's the depth on each route, timing, those kind of things. But the receiving core on offense, I think, is the biggest question mark. And then defensively, man, the switch from a 4-3 to a 3-4, yeah, there's a lot of shaking up going on over there on the defensive side of the football. So I think that unit as a whole is something to keep an eye on. I know one guy, Ryan Pulley, is a cornerback that came on strong last year, was more of a boundary corner last year, he's a long-armed corner that can really make some plays. This year, they're being a little more multiple in the back end of the defense, and you're going to really see him have the opportunity to be an impact player in the conference, not just for the Razorbacks. I think he's a guy to keep an eye on. And as you know, every spring game, Cole, I mean, there's a bunch of young guys that are fighting for their lives out there and fighting for clock, man. So it's going to be fun to watch.
Clint Sterner joining us. Obviously played quarterback at Arkansas and be on the call for the Arkansas spring game tomorrow. Clint, going back and studying this team in the offseason, I've gained more of an appreciation for Austin Allen, and not so much for his ability and what he's able to do as a quarterback, but because I didn't realize the absolute beating that young man took in multiple games last year. In particular, Alabama and Texas A&M, the two worst that I saw. Arkansas has to upgrade this somehow, some way. They cannot allow him to be in harm's way in a similar fashion to what he was last season. How do they do that?
Well, get better on defense. I mean, they gave up way too many points on the defensive side of the football, so Arkansas was constantly playing catch-up. And when you get in that mode, you know, being Arkansas, there's very few teams in this conference that can get into a hurry-up, chase mode consistently game in, game out, and their quarterback not take a beating. Arkansas is not one of those schools that can afford to do that, and especially if you're young up front. They had lost a bunch of offensive linemen from the year before, so last year was a rebuilding year up front. You can't afford to get into a situation where you've got to put your quarterback in gun or get into deep play actions or seven-step drops consistently. So you got to avoid those situations from the jump, Cole. But I think the one difference you're going to see in this football team this year versus last year is the big guys up front. This offensive line is much more mature. You know, you've got a couple of question marks, but they're deep. And secondly, Dan Enos is as good an offensive mind as there is in the country. And he understands. He self-evaluates as well as anybody out there. He understands that he cannot put that offense in a position to play from behind and play and protect the quarterback as often as they had to last year.
Clint, great stuff, man. Before we let you run, I do just want to get your take on the Tennessee quarterbacks and what you saw from that position in at least one half of that spring game last week.
Quentin Dormady, man. I mean, he's a guy that team at this point in time needs. He's the cool, calm, collected upperclassman that tends to keep everybody, you know, running at the right pace on that offense. Nobody's trying to do more than just do their job, and he keeps everybody calm. And obviously, physically, he's a specimen. He's a 6'4 kid that, you know, sitting at 230, 235, maybe even heavier than that. He's good looking. He can throw it. So I really like what he brings to the table overall. But I tell you, man, Garantano is a special kid. He's labeled as a dual threat player, but he can absolutely spin the rock. And it's a pro style mechanical throw, and it's beautiful, man. It's just a matter of time before he is a starting quarterback at Tennessee. The guys love him. He's a vocal leader. And it's genuine and sincere within his own personality. So the team responds well to him. So it's definitely a quarterback battle, but I think right now, man, I think the team needs that cool, calm, collected upperclassman that knows how to get rid of the football, that knows how to keep them in the right play, and at the end of the day, just doesn't make a ton of mistakes. So I would expect him to go with Quentin Dormady.
Great stuff, Clint. Appreciate you jumping on late notice. We'll be watching tomorrow. Look forward to catching up soon.
You bet, Coach. Take care, buddy.
Thank you. Clint Sterner of the SEC Network joining us there to talk Arkansas and Tennessee spring games. We're back to wrap up the week next. Welcome again, Cube Show Sports Radio 730 and 103.9 The Yump. Appreciate you guys tuning in all week. If there's any interviews that you missed, you can always catch them on the podcast. Cameron DeSilva of Fox Sports joined us today. Gerard Powers, former Decatur Red Raider, Auburn Tiger, Colt, Cardinal, Raven, to talk draft. Joel Cordes, Clint Sterner, also with us today. Good stuff. Go get the podcast at umsports.com. Now your TV listings. I always feel like somebody's watching. Friday nights are always a little strange. CBS has Undercover Boss, 7 p.m. new episode.
That show's still going on, huh?
ABC has The Toy Box, new episode at 7 p.m.
No idea what that's about.
This could be kind of cool. This is piggybacking off the O.J. Simpson stuff. ABC, 8 p.m. tonight, Let It Fall. A look at the decade leading up to the L.A. riots of 1992. This documentary examines the era's racial tensions, rise of gangs, crack epidemic, and the efforts of the LAPD to clamp down on the violence.
It could be worth a few minutes.
Dateline NBC tonight, 8 p.m. I'm a big fan of Dateline. The July 1997 murder of fashion luminary Gianni Versace is explored with new details and new interviews. Forrest Gump tonight on AMC at 6 p.m. You love that, Arky. It's one of your favorites.
Yeah, run, Forrest, run, my man.
Happy Gilmore tonight, 7 p.m. on... I'll give you a guess.
Oh, okay. Happy Gilmore. The Polaris Channel.
CMT.
Oh, like that...
Not sure where our fit is there, but...
Here's the thing. At this point...
Just show stuff.
You just get to play everything you
get
you
a
want.
Network and you just
you,
show
you
things.
You just show whatever you want, no matter what day of the year it is. If it's Christmas stuff, play it now. If it's Happy Gilmore, you play it now. Billy Madison. Hey, by the way, what's your favorite Adam Sandler movie?
Probably Happy Gilmore. Billy Madison, Happy Gilmore, coin flip.
I'm trying to guess. That's why I was trying to say what would be the determinant factor between those two.
He's got more one-liners in Billy Madison that are hilarious.
Yeah, probably.
Proceed. So, yeah, got that.
Where are you at on Waterboy?
It's okay. Not as good as those two. Game of the night, NBC Sports Network. Stanley Cup playoff game 2, Predators at Blues, 7 p.m. Exciting. I'll be watching the draft.